Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
The show question is posted on Twitter, twitter.com/1003TheTeam. Let's get started right there. Chip Kelly was at a press conference today, as coaches typically are midweek. Always have to satisfy the press. Always need quotes. Always need sound. And I love press conferences. I wouldn't know what to do without press conferences. But Chip Kelly, being that the Eagles have not had an ideal start to the season, and given that a number of interesting college football coaching jobs are open right now, Southern California, South Carolina, Maryland, to name a few that might potentially be interesting to Chip Kelly. And before anybody scoffs and says, why would Chip Kelly want any of those jobs other than SoCal? Well, keep in mind, Oregon was not Oregon before he got there. He might be the kind of person that relishes the opportunity to take a doormat like Maryland, post Ralph Regan, and turn it into something. He might want to do that because then he looks better in comparison. Is that kind of what Spurrier did with South Carolina? Now, I know Lou Holtz went to some bowl games, but still, I mean, everything Spurrier did at South Carolina was almost the first time ever for 3 or 4 years consecutively. So I wouldn't say that any of those jobs are out of play for Chip Kelly. And Kelly, to me, is the ultimate wild card. I would believe just about anything from Chip Kelly over the next 12 months. I would somehow believe the Eagles getting hot and making it to a Super Bowl. I would somehow believe the Eagles going 5-11 and firing him. I would believe him taking any college job under any of those circumstances in between. He just seems to be a bizarre guy that we don't know anything about. I mean, people don't know what he did between 22 years old and 26 years old or something. Like, you can't find out what he did. There's a really interesting piece on him in the Washington Post about what a mysterious guy he is. I would believe anything. And so he is asked today by a reporter whether he is interested in some of the college openings.
Chip, is anyone from Southern Cal contacting you or your agent?
No. North Texas. State. The Armadillos or whatever. Tell anyone, yeah, just keep asking questions. I guess the press conference, it'll be over quicker.
Yeah, no. I mean,
no, well, that's, what do you want to talk about? Let's talk about another college.
No, I mean,
you got 10 minutes, so let's talk about North Texas. I know you have an obligation, and I understand it. It's going to happen. We're not successful and we're not winning. I came from college. I'm going to go back to college. So I hope someday to be like Coach Coughlin and win enough games where I can stay around long enough where that speculation ends. But I understand you have to ask the question. But I answered it the same way a year ago. I answered it the same way my first year here. It's just, it's an unfortunate part of the game.
That audio is courtesy of ESPN.com. And I really do feel for a lot of these coaches that have to show up to work almost every day and get asked about job openings. And on some levels, it has to be flattering, right? Because if you aren't a good coach at either college or professional level, no one's asking you about job openings, right? I mean, nobody is going to Vanderbilt press conference and they're like, Derek Mason, all these great gigs are open. Which one are you going to take? And he may turn into something at Vanderbilt, but that was a pretty precipitous decline he had in terms of what James Franklin was able to do and what his first year was. And so as of right now, he has no coaching stock. So it is on some level flattering that these guys continue to get asked those questions. And lest you think Chip Kelly be a little rude to North Texas by saying he was interested in their opening, he got confused there. He was trying to come up with a fictional school. He was trying to come up with Texas State from the movie Necessary Roughness, the Texas State Armadillos. I'm just reading about this on ProFootballTalk.com. I haven't seen that movie. But North Texas is a real school, and it does make it seem like he's turning his nose up at bad offers by saying, yeah, I'm going to go to North Texas State next year, because he kind of smashes together a fictional school with a real one. But, I mean, my question to you guys, we're going to play plenty of these here in a second, 843-652-3776. If you were a really good head coach, if you were Mark D'Antonio, if you were Chip Kelly, if you were one of those guys, how would you answer the persistent questions about what job you were going to take next. If you were Justin Fuente at Memphis, if you were Jeff Brohm at Western Kentucky, and you clearly had aspirations of winning a national championship, but at the same time, you can't just totally tell recruits that, yep, I'm going to take the first Power Conference offer that I get, whenever that may be. You obviously can't answer that question. And it's a question a lot of these guys get asked. And of course, the all-time one that you don't play it as is Nick Saban coaching the Miami Dolphins, denying, flat out denying that he would be in Alabama the next year.
I don't know how else I can say it, guys. I've said it three different occasions. Well, then I guess I have to say it. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. I think I've said this over and over and over again.
That's one of my all-time favorite quotes. I can't play that enough. If you guys think that we play it too often, deal with it. It's not going to end anytime soon. But, I mean, so clearly what you say, I guess, doesn't really matter all that much. I mean, Harbaugh took the stance last year when the 49ers were turning into a grease fire. Not the level of what they are right now, but because his general manager and his owner clearly didn't back him, he started to lose the locker room a little bit, and he is offered the Michigan job during the middle, or I should say during the end of the NFL regular season, and he's asked about that, and he goes the blanket policy, I don't talk about offers route.
Offered a contract by the University of Michigan.
As you know, I mean, I only talk about the job that I have. We've been together a long time, and it's a long-standing policy.
Don't say you have to ask the guy. Like, that's one thing that I can't stand about. Like, anytime there's a question that's a little uncomfortable to ask a coach, and someone says, well, I had to ask you that, it's like, why don't you just grow a pair? Why don't you just say the question and say, personally, I find the answer to this question interesting. Jim, did you get an offer from Michigan? And Harbaugh has every right in that situation to say, hey, I'm focused on the next week. I'm not going to comment on job offers. And that's probably a smart policy. Now, Moglia went the opposite route last year when there were some openings, mainly the Nebraska one, that some folks around here were a little curious as to whether or not it would lure the very successful Chanticleer head coach away from the beach. And he just went on to basically talk about all of his job offers.
I got the head job offer with the New York Jets. I got the head job offer with Nebraska. I got the head job offer at Notre Dame, but they were going to be willing to fire Kelly, but then they changed their mind later on, and I didn't want any of them.
And he has been way more direct about that question in the past. And I still remember being at a press conference in 2013 when, and don't get me wrong, I mean, Mowgli is... age right now is a huge deal. Josh Kendall in the state newspaper, the guy who's the beat writer for the newspaper for the Gamecocks, mentioned Moglia's name today with regard to the South Carolina vacancy. And what he said was, his entire article that Josh Kendall wrote today, which is a nice piece, is about how to win in Power Conference football right now in the year 2015 is that you need a CEO head coach, and recruiting is far more important than X's and O's. He said Spurrier could draw plays better than anybody in the country, but that's not stopping the Gamecocks from being a miserable team this year, and basically has faulted their recruiting processes for the position that they're in right now, and that the next head coach, according to Josh Kendall, for South Carolina needs to be someone who goes 100% balls to the wall recruiting. He thinks that's what they need, and they need that more CEO approach rather than someone who is an X's and O's wizard. And he said, before you clamor for Joe Moglia, he's 66 years old, and that's going to be out of the age range that South Carolina is looking at for a head coach. So perhaps that answered a question right there that some of you might have. I've heard some people say that. One of our listeners asked me off the air 2 days ago about whether I thought Moglia or South Carolina would have some interest in. If he were 10 years younger, I mean, he would be getting some crazy job offers right now. And to Moglia's credit, he doesn't try to deny that there's interest ever. And he says, and he's very grateful for President DeCenzo for giving him a head coaching job. And he had never been a head coach in college before, and there were a lot of people that were offering him athletic director jobs 4 or 5 years ago. He was not getting head coaching offers. And he likes his situation here. As you guys know, it's not a terrible place to live. He's in a conference that he can certainly win at right now. He's got great assistant coaches to work with, and they've got a good system going. They're going to be FBS soon. So,
and he's creating his own legacy here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he is already the best head coach in Coastal history, and every time he wins a game, he builds on his own legacy. Whereas if he goes to a power conference school and doesn't work in 2 or 3 years, suddenly, you know, he's just an afterthought. So, yeah, there are a lot of positives to him being here at Coastal Carolina for, you know, if you are Joe Moglia. And Jeff Zell, who did a nice job on TV down here for a while, who now lives in Charlotte, asked him about, I can't remember if it was about a specific opening or if it was just a generic question. And what Moglia said was awesome. He said, the job would have to be so good that President DeCenzo would say that I am a fool not to take it. That's a great answer. That really is a terrific answer because it acknowledges the fact that he's not going to say he's going to be at Coastal Carolina forever, but he also says that essentially he's very happy. And I hate it when people say that they're never going to do something, as Saban said he was not going to be the Alabama coach. And that just to me seems very dishonest because a million and one things can change, right? A big reason why Roy Williams turns down North Carolina the first time it's offered to him after Dean Smith retires, and then, excuse me, after Bill Guthridge retires, and then he takes it again after Matt Daugherty gets run out of Chapel Hill, is because his athletic director changed in Kansas, and he felt less respect in the building at Kansas than the first time he was offered it. So it was easier for him to take it the second time around. So things change. No one should say that they're going to be at a school forever or that they're never going to take a job if offered to them. But Moglia straight up said it would have to be a job so good that the president of this college would tell me I'm a fool not to take it. And then he also, which was really awesome, said that he didn't need the money and that he didn't need the ego because he had been very successful in business. And I thought, man, what a way to command that question. And you still see it over and over and over again. Like Mark D'Antonio, again, South Carolina fans would love to see him come to Columbia where he graduated from and replace Steve Spurrier, and he's asked yesterday by a reporter, and he's tired of this question before it's even asked.
Coach, just want to get this out of the way. Your name's come up. This Steve Spurrier's retirement, South Carolina. Of course, you played there.
First question, huh?
Yeah, just get it out of the way. Can you talk about that opening in South Carolina?
Yeah, Coach Spurrier's had an outstanding career there. It's my alma mater, and we're here to talk about Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, that's very concise. That's not a bad way to handle those questions. That really isn't, because the longer you talk about it, the more of a distraction it becomes.
Well, and I'm sure the more you hear it, the more you're going to get aggravated. So if you just keep talking about it, then he's eventually going to snap like Saban or Chip Kelly and just start bashing the reporter, which isn't a good look.
But and also the way we talk about these situations kind of needs to change a little bit, because the guys that are in the running for these high-profile jobs, the Chip Kellys, the Mark D'Antonios, they are not having these conversations the week before they play Michigan, right? Believe it or not, even though Michigan State is higher in the polls, Las Vegas considers Michigan State to be a touchdown underdog right now. At Michigan, against a Michigan defense that hasn't allowed a point in 3 weeks, the last defense to pitch 3 consecutive shutouts was Alabama in 2012. This Michigan team is real. Mark D'Antonio does not want to deal with coaching rumors this week. And I guarantee you, him and his agent are not having, they're not like leaving practice and dialing up Ray Tanner on the phone like, okay, is this going to be $4 or $5 million? What do you got? What do you got for me? Is there going to be a signing bonus? Harbaugh got a signing bonus last year. I mean, I would bet anything that that's not actually going on right now. And maybe it's his agent who gets a feel for those situations. Should be interviewing people's agents, right? Chip Kelly's agent should be the one that, The Philadelphia newspaper writers are tracking down, camping out outside of his house, putting a recorder in his face. Who have you talked to today? How much are they going to offer him at SoCal? I mean, that's the way the conversation should go, because I highly doubt these coaches that are so successful have time to dabble in rumors and talking with ADs and NFL owners in the middle of the season when they're using every minute of preparation they can while humanly possible to get a look at Michigan on film. You know, how is Michigan State going to score points this weekend? Michigan's last three opponents couldn't do that. 843-652-3776. If you were a successful head coach, either in college or the pros, and you were routinely asked about job openings, what would you say? How would you handle it? I mean, I think the Moglia route, and not just to be the guy that always says Mowgli is the man, which I realize I do that a lot, but he kind of is the man. That's the way that I would handle it. Dustin Smith tweets at 1003 the team, sounds like Josh Kendall wants a Dabo. My, how things have changed. Just let that sink in, man. And that always comes up when we have some form of topic on this show about why it is that Dabo Swinney doesn't get the respect that his one-loss record has probably demanded. And, you know, hey, he is a CEO coach. He was never a coordinator, as everybody knows. And I don't know how active he is in play calling on either side of the ball, but I would assume not at all. And he goes after, with a lot of money, top paid assistant coaches, guys that can come in and get the job done. He's an excellent recruiter, and they have a very sophisticated approach to recruiting at Clemson. So he has basically figured out how to major in the minors, as they say, and make sure that his program is well-rounded. He's staying on top of the details and lets Brent Venables and Tony Elliott handle the X's and O's. And I think that's a great way for South Carolina to go, to be honest. I mean, like I said on yesterday's show, I mean, bottom line is you just want a winner, right? You just want a winner. I mean, the best situation would be if you could get somebody like Jim Harbaugh or Jimbo Fisher, who is an X's and O's wizard on the offensive side of the ball and knows how to put together a staff and is a jackhammer recruiter. I mean, that's like, yeah, I mean, that's just a straight up home run if you could get somebody like that. But it does seem right now, in general, the guys that are best at recruiting are kind of the safest plays. Like, because if you just have great players, it's, you know, you're going to get by a lot of teams. And Josh Kendall's counterfactual right now is what happens when you have an X's and O's coach and poor recruiting for two or three consecutive cycles. Well, that's how you end up with this year's South Carolina team. 843-652-3776. Steve is on the line right now. What do you got for us, Steve?
Hey, guys. Listen, Gamecock fan. Enjoy your show. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just not a fan of Mark D'Antonio. I mean, he's a great coach. He's done his gig at Michigan State, and I'm just tired of going that route. I don't know that he would bring the energy and enthusiasm that it would need, because like, I think recruiting right now is 75% of what a head coach does. And of course, you got to have the staff, and we got to be willing to open up the pocketbooks to get the right staff and, you know, things of that nature. But there was a name that came across my phone today, and I'll hang up and listen to your comment. Again, I Kirby Smart, I think if he does good here at South Carolina, then Saban retires, he bolts for Alabama. So I'm not that big a fan of him either. But he's coached at South Carolina before he actually coached at Clemson. And he was a grad assistant at South Carolina in the early 90s. But it's Rick Bisacci. With the Cowboys, I think he's their special teams coordinator and assistant head coach. So I'm going to hang up and kind of listen to what you guys think about that name. Take care.
Yeah, Steve, appreciate the call. I have to admit, and I like to be straight up with you guys, if I BS, you guys know I'm BSing, and that's not good radio. Steve, you caught me off guard. I have to admit, during this commercial break, I'm going to take a look at this guy's resume and see what I think after that. But the idea, Rick, I mean, the idea, Steve, that someone would be a special teams coordinator and come in and be a head coach is kind of interesting because of the different way that different programs handle special teams. Like here at Coastal Carolina, Moglia likes every head coach on staff to have some kind of responsibility in special teams. That way, everyone on the team is invested in it. And it's generated incredible results here, you know, at a different level than the SEC, but you would think the process would still work. And Coastal's won a number of close games by being special teams guys. Or by being excellent on special teams. And you think about head coaches in football right now that really specialize in special teams, and the one thing you think over and over again is Beamer ball, right? That Frank Beamer, that was a hallmark of some of his really good teams at Virginia Tech, is they could always come up with a blocked kick or a blocked punt when they needed to, and that was one way how they made a difference and won close games. Myrtle Beach High School here does an excellent job with their special teams. But nobody really goes after special teams coordinators for head coaching jobs. I mean, I can't, and I think, Steve, that's kind of the tone of this conversation, is that you should be more open-minded about what becomes a successful head coach right now in 2015, because if you were to look at Dabo's resume in 2008, and what Spurrier had on his resume in 2008, and you were to say, one of these guys is going to get run in 2015, which person is it? Not a single person would say Dabo, and that's because the college football landscape has changed, and he happens to be very good at things that are important at in 2015. And maybe a special teams coordinator could do the trick. And the thing is, I don't, this guy's on the Dallas Cowboys staff. I have no idea what his recruiting ties are to this area. And that's very important, because when you're at South Carolina and you're trying to have success, you're recruiting in-state against a number of ACC and SEC schools. You not only have to recruit South Carolina well, but you have to go into Georgia and Florida and take players from the University of Georgia. You have to go up against Florida, Florida State. If Miami gets a decent head coach, you know you're going to have a tough time getting players away from Clemson in the state from now on. It's, you know, I would want somebody that really understands how to recruit the Southeast, or at least someone that understands recruiting and hires assistants who understand the specific landscape of the Southeast. But that is a really interesting idea, because I can't think of somebody that's leapt from a special teams coordinator to a head coach at any level. It's just something that's not done. But maybe part of that is you get really good offensive and defensive coordinators. Because one of the unfortunate things that happens when you have a coach who is known for one thing, in the way that Jimbo Fisher is known for offense, for instance, or the way Steve Spurrier was known for offense, it's really hard to put together or to find a really good coordinator on that side of the ball, because the perception is that it's the head coach's offense. Jimbo Fisher routinely loses coordinators because of the control that he exerts over his staff, right? Jeremy Pruitt leaves from Florida State to Georgia. Stacy Coley leaves from Florida State to Miami because at Miami he gets to call plays. Now, he might be out of a job soon, but you get what I'm saying. And Spurrier never really had an official offensive coordinator, so maybe one of the virtues of hiring a special teams guru is that, just like with a Dabo at Clemson, people are always going to give Brent Venables credit for the defense. No one's going to say that's the Dabo Swinney defense, right? So maybe that does help in terms of getting heavy hitters on your staff, because nobody feels overshadowed as well. Potential positive. 843-652-3776 is the number. Interested in hearing your thoughts on how you guys would handle job offer rumors in season if you were a good head coach. And I'm not going to take the same route on the Blue Jays game last night that everybody is hammering home the bat flip, but there was something else interesting about that game that I want to discuss next. This is Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Rich Bisaccia. I love it when people teach me things on this show. Very interesting resume, following up on Steve's call earlier. Rich Bisaccia, as he mentioned, has experience coaching as a graduate assistant and then as an assistant at both South Carolina and Clemson, and was last in the college game at Ole Miss as an assistant head coach and a running backs coach, then spent time with the Buccaneers and the Chargers, both as special teams coordinators, running backs coach, and assistant head coach at a lot of these stops. So he does seem to have some kind of focus on the offensive side of the ball, because he's been a running backs coach and a special teams coordinator. So very interesting resume. The only qualm that I would have looking at this guy is that he hasn't been in the college game since 2001. But at the same time, Jim Mora had never been in the college game. And he's turned out to be, I would say, if you were doing a fantasy draft of college head coaches to lead a program right now, you would probably take UCLA's Jim Mora in the top 10. Now, the conversation would get a little dicier if you're talking about 1 year or 20 years. But either way, I think any Gamecock fan in the world would do backflips to have Jim Mora as their head coach. And that's also an interesting point that I'm going to get into. There are a lot of really good head coaches in the NFL whose names you might not know that could be players here. And so Rich Bisaccia might be the guy. He's the kind of guy that a search firm would really identify. That's the kind of difference when you're doing a really wide-ranging search and you've got a lot of time. And the average fan's going to know, well, hey, D'Antonio went to South Carolina, and you're maybe not going to know Mr. Bisaccia's name. Kevin tweets us at 1003 the team. John Harbaugh was the Eagles special teams coach for 9 years before getting the Ravens job. Huh, it's interesting, Kevin. I did not know that. But it does seem rare for someone that's known to have a special teams background to take over a head coaching job. And Larry Fedora, I'm not a huge fan of, even as a North Carolina guy, and I'm not floating his name for any rumors, nor am I sure I would really care if he ended up leaving for another job, just to be honest. I couldn't feel any more lukewarm, middle of the road about a coach that coaches one of my teams than Larry Fedora. But that's his thing, is special teams too. I mean, obviously he's got the Fed spread, air quotes. So he's known for having been an offensive coordinator, but as a head coach, what he takes most ownership over is special teams, because he still enjoys hands-on coaching. He wants to have a role on the team, but he doesn't want to get in the way of either of his two coordinators, because he wants to have talent on his staff. So it's an interesting approach, how teams view special teams and the backgrounds of their head coaches. 843-652-3776 is the number. Now, I am not the biggest baseball fan in the world. Part of that, I think, is it's just hard to find a team to like down here. Because, I mean, I grew up in Charlotte, and it's like, wait, we're supposed to like the Atlanta Braves? Aren't the Falcons and the Hawks like the natural rivals of Charlotte's teams? Like, what? Like, I'm supposed to like an Atlanta team? It just comes off as weird to me. So I never really got a team that I loved.
It's just so boring and slow. Gosh, I cannot watch. Like, if I want to watch it to go to bed, that's a good way. That or reading a book.
Hot sports takes from Brian Nelson. Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily find all of baseball boring. Like, if a pitcher's got really good stuff and he's making people just wave their bats around out there, I think that's wildly entertaining. In the same way that I like to see a golf course win, I like to see professional golfers shoot over par. I like to see an ace out there making dudes look like idiots. I mean, I love that if somebody's dealing.
I'd rather watch golf, though, because at least it flips between the different guys. There's always someone hitting. Like, you can watch baseball and be nothing happening for freaking an hour.
Well, the game's a little more nuanced than that, Brian. I'm not going to get into that. But one thing that I did think was interesting, the Bautista bat flip, only baseball could turn the conversation into, are you allowed to have fun playing the game? Act like you've been there before. I mean, listen, nobody said Charlie Strong, act like you've been there before, when he got crowd surfed after they beat Oklahoma. Like, everybody in the world realized, okay, here's a guy that's 1-4. His athletic director just got fired. He's on the verge of getting run in the middle of a season. And somehow, out of nowhere, he beats the 10th-ranked team in the country on a neutral field, and his players are carrying him around, and they're parading around putting highlight videos on Twitter, and they're acting like they won the Super Bowl. But that's because that was a huge deal in that moment. That's part of what's fun for sports. Like, Charlie Strong is a great guy. Remains to be seen whether he's up to the par to coach the Texas Longhorns, but I think all of us watching it can enjoy the emotion that he displayed after beating Oklahoma, and we can all, at least at some point in our lives, empathize with being down and out and realize, hey, this is a really cool moment, seeing this emotion. And I just don't understand why you can't have that in baseball. Like, I don't understand. Like, everybody's mad at Jose Bautista for, it's not even a bat flip, y'all. Like, he threw it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, them enjoy it. They just hit a pitch, yeah, coming in at 90-plus miles an hour. He hit it 300-plus feet. Let him put the bat between his legs and do the Josh Norman giddy-up dance all the way around the bases for I care.
I mean, the Blue Jays hadn't won a playoff series in like 20 years. And he just basically clinched it with a giant swing. And he looks at his home run, he throws his bat. I mean, why is displaying emotion bad? But that wasn't even the most interesting part of it to me. To me, it was seeing all of the Rangers' errors. I mean, honestly, like, I watch golf, even though I don't golf. I watch golf in the majors because I love to see the tension on these guys' faces when they deal with leading on the back nine on Sunday. I love to see how guys handle it, whether or not they're going to melt down. I love to watch that tension. And the Rangers infield, they looked like John Vandeveld. I mean, they might as well have been in the creek with their pants rolled up like he was, because that was one of the biggest choke jobs on really, really easy plays. I mean, I don't want to say that I could do it, but like, there are like high school infielders that could have made some of those routine plays that end up coming back to haunt them. And it's just the tension of the moment which becomes fun. I mean, that's why I dig playoff baseball. Anyways, 843-652-3776. Sam is on the line. What do you got for us, Sam?
Hey, man, first of all, go figure that Mr. Canada Brian doesn't like American pastime, right?
Yeah. No, I wasn't thrilled about Brian's take there. I mean, just jump in the microphone and just categorically calling a sport boring. And now I'm here to clean up the mess. I've got angry callers. And, anyway, Sam.
Hey, good Vandeveld reference, though. But, hey, the bat flip was awesome, by the way. It was a towering home run. Anyone who's seen the different angles of that thing, wow, like that's action. You know what I mean? That's like a 50-yard run, you know, down the sideline, tiptoeing. To me, anyway, that was pretty cool. It just happens to happen within a split second as opposed to, you know, 10 seconds of someone actually running down the field. But as far as the unwritten rules go, like, it's kind of old school. Like, you know, everyone kind of pats themselves on the back when they're an old school baseball guy, and they always, you know, quote the unwritten rules. And it's been a pretty good topic all over sports radio today. And it's weird because, yeah, okay, so you can't show off and flip your bat, but it's okay to throw at someone's head in retribution. Like, it's kind of weird when it comes to the old, you know, the old unwritten rules of baseball. But baseball's a lot better when you get personality in it. You know, when you got the Sammy Sosa hitting a home run, it's jumping down the first baseline. Or you get McGuire crushing balls, or Jose, or, you know, that's when baseball's at its best. And it's not just home runs. It's when you have personalities like Matty Bumgarner and some of these great pitchers that we have now. You actually have personalities. You've got really good rivalries. And to be honest with you, I'm loving the way the CSs are shaping up. I think Cubs, Mets would be awesome. You know, and we've got the Royals in there. So and back to the Toronto Blue Jays. So actually, I think I might watch a little more baseball rather than football. So I'm not really excited about seeing the Saints get dominated by Atlanta. That's my take on that, man. You guys have a good day.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Sam. Get to you in a second, JC. 843-652-3776 is the number. And it is odd that we have singled this one sport where it's like not okay to display emotion, and there's going to have to be fights after that. Like, every once in a while, you do see a fight in football because someone celebrated excessively. See Terrell Owens going after midfield at the Cowboys Stadium. But it's deemed okay, and drama is what's really interesting in sports. That's why we love the NCAA tournament, is because we know how much it means to all those guys, and they get one shot and they're out of it. It's the heightened drama that's really interesting, and drama leads to emotion and show emotion. It's interesting. Now, if someone out there is a total Terminator, like Coastal Carolina's quarterback Alex Ross or Jordan Spieth or somebody that literally you have never known if they were happy or sad one day in their life because they're so even keel, that becomes a part of the drama because it becomes interesting. If somebody is out there and they hit a home run and they're really humble, they don't pimp the home run, they don't stare at it too long, they don't do anything clownish on the base path, they don't flip their bat, well, you can like that guy for behaving that way because that's a value you respect, but I just don't understand how displaying raw emotion in a really tense moment and seeing how your team is advancing the playoffs for the first time, you have been there. I mean, let's try and wrap our mind around the idea that Bautista has been in Toronto for a long time and has worked very hard and has maybe wanted to win a playoff series. And did he have that thought in that moment, like, hey, I'm really going to show up this relief pitcher by seeing how far I can throw my baseball bat? Or was he like, man, this is awesome? And it just happened. So it's very confusing to me. And what Sam said is 100% correct. The idea that you're allowed to throw at somebody is total BS. I mean,
I think if I was Canadian, I'd be loving the baseball going on right now since the Blue Jays won.
Yes. Excellent rebuttal to Sam's criticism, Brian. But yeah, I mean, throwing baseballs at people is super dangerous. And I agree with Sam's take on that somehow that's like seen as an honorable thing to do. That's something that needs to be modernized, right? That's one of those blatant examples of because we've always done it in sports does not mean it's a great idea. And if I were Rob Manfred, that's one of the things I would really make it a priority to get after guys. Like, I would throw absurd suspensions out there for guys that are blatantly throwing at people or trying to break up double plays by just doing flying sidekicks. That would be my agenda if I were the commissioner of baseball. 843-652-3776. JC is on the line. What's up, man?
What's going on, Lewis? How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good.
Listen, statements by Canadians about how boring baseball is. You want to watch Canadian bacon five times and root for the Royals. Because, you know, baseball to someone who doesn't really follow it, it might be a boring game. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, a whole swath of Americans don't watch hockey, particularly in this part of the country.
Sure.
But you don't hear us. I mean, I don't hear many people in the South say, oh, well, hockey's a boring game. They just, it's not relevant because we don't have ice on, you know, but maybe once every 5 years. And so, you know, you've got one place in Canada, Toronto, that has one baseball team, and they haven't won anything in 20 years, And, you know, it just, to me, it seems, it doesn't make sense because, you know, baseball is it's America's pastime. And if an American who was living in Ottawa were to say that, oh, you know, hockey sucks, you know, that wouldn't go over well with the natives. And I think that when people say, oh, well, baseball stinks, you know, it's America's pastime. And yes, there are more football fans than there are baseball fans, but baseball purists and passionate baseball fans are a very vocal bunch when someone offends their sensibilities. I tend to be a love baseball player growing up, and to me, the idea that baseball is a boring game, I think people who say that generally aren't smart, because baseball is a thinking man's game. And so to me, I would just respond like that and let you guys talk about that. Enjoy the show as always.
Yeah, JC, JC reacting to Brian's comments. Brian's getting the pitchforks out right now.
I wish I could hear all of that.
I never said baseball was boring. That was Brian. I'm in a position now where I'm taking heat rounds because of my producer.
If he thinks baseball is more entertaining than hockey, then he's got another thing.
Settle down. Now you can't just respond to somebody who you didn't hear because there are people on the phone. JC, I don't know if JC realizes that you're actually an American dude, not Canadian. Like, that's the joke on the show, that Brian's Canadian because he hasn't watched Rocky IV. So Sam was just furthering on a show inside joke. Brian is not actually Canadian. He just is hostile to baseball. But JC, yeah, I mean, the reason I don't talk a lot of baseball on this show is because I don't get the sense that the audience wants to talk a lot of baseball. If we were in Atlanta, if we were in New York, I mean, if we were in certain places where I thought baseball moved the needle more, I talk about what I think you guys want to talk about. And that's what it comes down to. Whenever someone calls up and says, hey, it's a Friday in the South, why aren't you talking high school football? You know, if I thought that all of you wanted to hear me talk about Myrtle Beach's emerging passing offense and how unstoppable Conway is, or how Bradley Adams at Georgetown is doing a tremendous job coaching the Bulldogs this year, how his dual threat quarterback Jarvis Brown is maybe the most important player in the area, I can throw down and I can do that. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to come up with the topics that most people care about. So I'm not, you know, I wasn't trying to be disrespectful to baseball. I think Brian was. But anyways, if I got the sense that you guys cared more about baseball, I would talk more about it. But obviously the baseball playoffs, that moves the needle. So I'm gonna bring that into the conversation more. Kyle tweets at me, at Lou Woodard, you're boring and slow, Brian Nelson. You're boring and slow. Let's go Mets. Everyone's after Brian. 843-652-3776. Jeremy is on the line. What's up, Jeremy?
Hey, how are you doing today?
Doing well, man.
I was calling to kind of weigh in. I just got off of work, so I'm just driving home, and I didn't really hear a lot of the preemptive up to what was going on. But in regards to the home runs that happened in Toronto, absolutely 100% disagree that he should not have been drilled by the next. The pitcher should have drilled the next batter so hard that he couldn't play the next day. Coming from a guy that played all my life, I mean, high school, college, played minor league ball. I actually used to play against the Pelicans. So, I mean, I'm not just somebody that never got out of Little League that doesn't know. You know what I mean?
Well, right. No, I mean, I think that gives you a viewpoint that makes it even harder to have this conversation, right? Because
my thing is that, like you said, the commissioner needs to come down harder on the guy that's going to throw at the guy after he shows somebody up. Well, I'm looking at it more from a perspective as a batter. You know, you can live in the moment. You're more than welcome to show that pitcher up, or you're not doing it on purpose. What you need to realize is there's repercussions for your actions. And if your actions cause your fellow teammate to get drilled, then that's the batter's fault. That the pitcher's doing, you know, he's basically saying, you know what, you're going to show me up, you're going to show up my team. I am in a position where I can defend my team. Now, you might not like the way I'm defending it. My actions, I might get suspended for 5 games. I might get suspended for 10 games. But if the guy didn't show him up in the first place, if he didn't sit there, I mean, there's a difference between, you know, hey, I hit a home run like he did. Batista hit that home run and hit it 500 feet.
Crushed it.
Be excited about it. Give the fist pump. You know what I'm saying? I got no problem with that. But to sit there and throw your bat practically back to the dugout the way he did, on top of the fact that the guy that came up behind Batista was the one that pimped the home run to tie it at 2-2. He should have gotten drilled his next time up anyway.
Yeah, but Jeremy, and I respect the fact that you played the game for a long time and you understand its code of ethics better than I do, but I just don't understand how risking player injury is at all a way to respond to taunting. Like I don't see those as eye to eye at all. I mean, that seems like such, you know, that would be like if someone bumped into you at a bar and the guy just slugs you. Like, I mean, that's what it seems like to me. It seems like unequal retaliation.
Well, I mean, like I said, there's levels of it. I'm not saying that you're going to put one in his ear hole, you know, but, you know, putting one between the numbers, yeah, that's warranted. You know, and then also to defend what you were talking about as far as baseball being boring. Like I said, I've watched, you know, those 160-game seasons from the sidelines, watched it from the bullpen. I was a setup man out of the pen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know what it's like to sit there and watch 160 games. Now, the boring part I can understand now. Playoff baseball and watching occasional games, but I can understand where you're coming from saying that baseball is boring when you're looking at a 162-game season overall. It's very tough to watch your team for 160 games, but baseball, if you had it from, like, hey, there's game five of the playoffs, that I can't defend you on.
Season
can tend to be boring sometimes. Yes, it can. That's why they call it the dog days of summer, man. It can get monotonous.
Yep. Amen. I appreciate the call, Jeremy. That was also my producer who said baseball is boring. That was not me. But I get that there's a code of ethics. I get that. I understand that there is a way that baseball players consider a sacred right to self-police. I just don't understand why risking player safety is at all on par with watching a home run too long. Like Andrew McCutchen at the end of the 2014 season misses weeks because he's got a broken wrist, if I remember correctly. I can't remember if it was a wrist or a rib, but he broke something because of a retaliation beanball from something that he didn't have anything to do with. And I just don't think that's at all appropriate. And if I were the commissioner, I would address that. Jeremy and I disagree. 843-652-3776. One more call here from Kevin, and then we're going to hit a break. Kevin, what's up?
Does Jeremy think for 1 second if Dyson would have struck out that guy after three errors, he wouldn't have celebrated some way? It comes down to what's going on at the game. Yeah, in the middle of the season, you hit a home run, you're not going to put the bat. Maybe if he does, then you get drilled. But after what happened at the top of the inning, in the middle of a really important baseball game, that's just crazy.
Yeah, pitchers don't get called out nearly as much for pumping their fist after a strikeout as guys do after a bat flip. I mean, that's just, you know, again, that's just the quirks of baseball and its culture, I think. Yeah, and I mean, Kevin, appreciate the call. I hear what you're saying. I mean, I am on Team Bautista bat flip. I mean, you know, it's crazy. I mean, you're in the NFL, and Josh Norman, no one is blindsiding him the next play after he rides his football into the end zone. I get that there are differences and complexities in each sport's culture, but you can have your culture. There can be things that make your sport unique and weird. I could tell you all of the things that make cross country and track and field unique and weird that I would absolutely stand up to, including short shorts. But that's boring radio, and you guys aren't going to hear that from me. But, I mean, I respect that there is a code. I just don't think that code should include risking injury. And, you know, as Jeremy said, hitting somebody between the numbers is fine. Don't throw at the ear hole. Well, guys throw at the strike zone and miss the strike zone with regularity. What happens if you throw between the numbers and it hits the ear hole? So I just don't think hitting anybody on purpose should ever be a part of baseball. Anyways, I'm going to get into a little bit of Panthers and Seahawks next. A beef between one of the Seahawks and one of the Panthers. Find out about it next. Back on Sound Off. Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. Producer drops a hot take and everyone else jumps on the phone line. I mean, if we wanted to stage this thing like wrestling, Brian, we couldn't have done any better today. This isn't a stage show.
I don't lie.
But, I mean, we couldn't have pulled it off that well if we had tried. But Brian inflamed some passions here from baseball fans. Brad tweets in at 1003 The Team. Are Sam and JC the same person? ? Hashtag QTNA. And, Brian, you found out what QTNA is?
Questions that need answers.
Yeah. In fact, different people. Different people. Great callers, different people. Glad they're both part of the Sound Off community. 843-652-3776. We opened up the show by asking if you were a very successful football coach and you were getting job rumors mid-season, how would you handle them? Alan's on the line. What's up, Alan?
Hey, Lewis. Yeah, I mean, personally, for me, if I was that coach, I would deny, proclaim my undying fealty and love to the university, all the while let my agent handle negotiations to get me the better job. If I don't know what my agent is doing, I can truthfully tell the media and my president, I don't know what's going on.
Boom.
I'm here for you. That's it.
the Saban methodology. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. Alan,
exactly.
Alan, I hope your employer's not listening because there's no telling where you're going to be next week.
Well, true story. I just hired someone who actually told his last two employers, by the way, I'm interviewing. The next day they said, have a good life.
Yep.
No, I would absolutely not. Because, you know, if you don't lose your job, you're going to lose your team. And isn't that one of the reasons why Spurrier said, I'm going to resign and not announce my retirement at the end of the season? He didn't want to lose the team.
Correct. And, Alan, I appreciate the call, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Lou Holtz actually did an interview on Sirius XM, and we couldn't get an audio file from the interview. I'm really frustrated by that because it was a very interesting transcript. And Lou Holtz said that both the times that he announced it was going to be his final season at South Carolina and at Notre Dame, he thought he lost his team both times. He didn't have any discipline because of that. And he said he was down with Spurrier doing what he did because of that, and he thought a big reason for that nasty brawl with South Carolina and Clemson is because his team lost discipline knowing that he was on the way out the door. But real quickly, here is Ron Rivera on the tension between Thomas Davis, Panthers middle linebacker, and Jimmy Graham. Excuse me, Panthers outside linebacker. My goodness. I'm all shook up today. All these hot takes coming out of nowhere. And Jimmy Graham, the tight end for the Seahawks.
Can't like each other. You know, no. It's you talk about a great competition and two guys compete against one another. It's a lot of fun to watch. It really is. And there have been times when Jimmy's gotten the best of TD and TD's gotten the best of him. And that's the fun thing about being able to compete against good players. You know, you really want to elevate your game. And those two guys, I think, are good for each other when they compete against one another. And believe me, I don't expect anything less from Jimmy Graham. I think he's a solid football player. You know, we got an opportunity to be around him at the Pro Bowl a couple of years ago, and, you know, I really liked who he is. I mean that. I'm not just saying. I do mean that.
The always classy Ron Rivera. Now, if you're a Panthers fan like me and the game goes south against Seattle and you're looking for ways to, I don't know, still enjoy the game or amuse yourself, you could watch Jimmy Graham try and block on running plays because it's quite comical. All right, how do we select call of the day? We'll try and figure that out. It's coming up next in Sound Off. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio, 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Brian Nelson is my studio producer. Disclaimer, I'm not responsible for opinions that he has. I will throw all pending litigation and heat rounds his way. Should make Brian, we should have an American like lineup of things that we make Brian do. Brian actually was born and raised in Northern Virginia, but we should come up with a list of things that need to correct Brian's shocking lack of Americana. Like we should have an entire day where like Brian has to eat a certain amount of hot dogs. He has to watch let's come up with a list of movies. Let's say Roadhouse, Red Dawn, Rocky IV, Independence Day. How else can we make it more American? Obviously, I have to have a pickup truck for him to have at some point during the day. There are just a lot of things that we need to do to correct the situation that Brian has going on right now. Call him playoff baseball boring.
I'm down for some free food, so.
Some hot dogs. Anyways, Brian. Having people get all mad at me on the radio.
I would defend myself, but I got to answer the phone all the time. So
yeah, well, it's a good thing you had to. I think JC might be waiting for you at the station if that conversation had gone on any longer.
That's all right. My Canadian flag will protect me.
Yeah,
I'll spare some maple syrup on him.
He's got a giant maple leaf shield that's going to protect him from all of the hostile natives. In terms of call of the day today, pretty difficult. A very all-around fun conversation, but we're gonna throw this one Jeremy's way.
It's time for the most coveted prize in North America, Sound Off Call of the Day.
In regards to the home runs that happened in Toronto, absolutely 100% disagree that he should not have been drilled by the next. The pitcher should have drilled the next batter so hard that he couldn't play the next day.
That's just, and I understand Jeremy played the game. He played minor league baseball. He's got a lot of experience with baseball and the ethics. And I'm not a baseball insider. I didn't play baseball after like eighth grade. So I'm not going to be one of those guys that, you know, that tries to say I know the game better. I flat out don't know the game. But as an outsider looking in, it seems like maybe the silliest practice in all of sports that I can think about, like something that just seems like, okay, well, a baseball going 95 miles per hour can really cause a lot of damage, especially when it's aimed at the strike zone and it accidentally goes up and in. Now, if you try and aim one for the numbers, yeah, it can bounce off a guy that weighs 230 pounds, just hit him square in the back and bounce off and cause no damage. But guys have control issues. How often does somebody on a 3-2 count need to throw a strike and miss the strike zone and put a base runner on when they're trying to get someone out? So what happens when you try to put one in between the numbers and it gets away from you? I just don't think the practice of throwing intentionally at somebody really makes sense, especially when it wasn't Bautista that ended up wearing the pitch. I mean, it just, I get it, baseball guys that played the game, I get that you've got your ethics, and that's why it's, I guess, such great talk show fodder right now, because there are a bunch of people that haven't lived it commenting on people that do live it and the way they go about living it. But that doesn't stop me from saying if I were Manfred, I would put an end to it. That and sliding at people. Are you serious? No flying sidekicks going into second base. Got to protect player safety on some level. Take a cue from the NFL, no matter how long it took them. All right, sports talk coming up next in the Career in Corn Blue. Stay right here.